From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, President Trump took some of our NATO allies to task yesterday. This is what he had to say.
So we're protecting Germany, we're protecting France, we're protecting all of these countries. And then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia, where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia.
And the president? Well, he got results. FRC's own retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin will be here with the details of yesterday's NATO meeting. Also yesterday, a congressional committee advanced a measure attached to the 2019 Labor, Health, and Human Services and Education Appropriations Bill that will protect the religious freedom of adoption providers. Congressman Robert Adderholt of Alabama will be here to explain why the measure is needed. And I just ran into the studio from a meeting of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. And one of the many items we discussed today was American pastor Andrew Brunson, who is being held captive in Turkey. One of my fellow commissioners, Vice Chairwoman Christina Arriaga, is headed to Turkey. She joins us here in studio with the latest on Pastor Brunson. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, President Trump's intense pressure on fellow NATO member countries to spend more on defense, well, it apparently paid off, with countries committing to spend $33 billion this year. This is a clip of what the president had to say yesterday after the meeting.
For years, presidents have been coming to these meetings and talked about the expense, the tremendous expense for the United States, and tremendous progress has been made. Everyone's agreed to substantially up their commitment. They're going to up it at levels that they've never thought of before.
And with us now is Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council, founding member of the Delta Force in the United States Army. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Pretty significant outcome. The president went in kind of rattling things up a bit, challenging Germany with this pipeline connected to Russia, saying, hey, you want us to help pay for your defense and you're putting money into the coffers of Russia. He came out with the NATO countries agreeing to pay more.
Yeah, he did. And I tell you what, I would really hate to be a former president right now, because he is really showing the kind of leadership that America has lacked, quite frankly, for over a decade. And I think that what he said to them is exactly what needed to be said to them. It got their attention, but it's not the first time they've heard it from him. Remember, a little over a year ago, he went and stood before them right after he came out of Riyadh, and he told them the same thing. So all the pundits, all the people that are criticizing him for this, he's getting results. Show me the results from the previous presidencies.
Yeah, that's what amazes me, is that he's criticizes, he's upsetting the apple cart. I mean, it's as if the status quo was good. The status quo was not good. He's changing that. And as you said, at every turn, he's getting results.
Yes, absolutely. And if you stop and think about it, there's 29 countries there in NATO. Only six of them are actually paying the 2%. And I think and America is one of them, obviously. So we're actually up at 4%. All he's asking them to do is do what they agreed to do in 2014 when they all signed up to do this, to work towards achieving 2%. And there is evidence that the majority of those that have not, that are not at 2%, have made very little effort to actually get there. And now he's standing up and calling them out. And they talk about, well, we need a little more backdoor diplomacy. No, he needs to do exactly what he's doing, because it's working. All that backdoor diplomacy has not been effective in the past. And Trump is calling them out in the international arena. And I think it's great.
General, let's step back for just a minute and talk about the significant part that the United States plays in NATO and what our military does for Europe? What does that mean to Europe in terms of the role that America plays in NATO?
To begin with, it's American leadership. America is always the head of NATO. And if you go back to 1993, when the French and the Brits said, well, we'll take care of this thing in the Balkans. We'll handle that. We don't need American leadership. In 1995, they came back and said, we can't do it. We need you to step in and take the leadership. And we did. And that's when everything started to get resolved in the Balkans. But they depend entirely upon America for leadership, but they also depend on our military capabilities. And even though we've reduced our capabilities over there since the theoretical end of the Cold War, we still have a very robust presence over there, and we spend an awful lot of our money in the defense budget supporting our allies in NATO.
I mean, obviously, we have an interest in a stable world, and so we want to be places where there might be problems. But it's also safe to say that the United States, through our military presence in Europe, keeps Europe safe, and that benefits those countries.
Well, that's right. And if you go all the way back to the Cold War era, it's very questionable as to, you know, what would have happened had America not been in the lead there and had forces positioned all over, really all over Germany, but in other parts of the, of Europe as well, like Belgium. If they hadn't been there, what would the Soviets have done during the time when they were most belligerent, when Khrushchev was slamming his shoe on the desk in the United Nations and threatening to bury us? Would they have come across the Fulda Gap and attacked Western Europe, knowing that Western Europe could not defend themselves? No, I think that it's a question that we ought to ponder, because I would say that our presence there has deterred exactly that, and it's we'll never know what the Soviets could have done, but we can certainly say America's presence in Europe has been a major deterrent.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Thursday afternoon. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. My guests, we're talking about the president's performance, if you will, yesterday at the NATO meeting. John Kerry, former Secretary of State, described the comments of the president that we played earlier as counterproductive, disgraceful, destructive. He said that Trump is setting America back, destroying America's reputation in the world. I think that was already done by the previous administration in which John Kerry was a part of.
Yeah, now this same John Kerry that put the Iranians on the pathway to a nuclear weapon, I believe, it's the same guy. Look, he's not credible anymore. He's a clown as far as I'm concerned. He was never a good Secretary of State, and quite frankly, if you go back and look at his record as a senator, I don't think he has any sterling record there either. So what he says totally fails to recognize that we're seeing success. We're actually seeing success. We're seeing those NATO partners starting to agree to pony up to do their share. And Trump has asked them to go to 4%. I mean, think about that. Not just meet your obligation, but go beyond it, double it, and which America is doing. So I think that Kerry's comments are ludicrous, coming from him especially.
I was having a discussion with some of my fellow commissioners at the USERF, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, today, talking about this administration, that we've not seen an administration that has put America first in our policies really like this since Ronald Reagan. And I think the world became so complacent with, you know, we'll just take what we can get. We don't want to upset anybody. We just want to go along to get along. That this type of leadership is shocking to some people, but it is what helped America become the leader that it is.
Well, it's worse than that at the time. Well, we had 8 years of the president of the United States apologizing for America, and when America is really our history of what we've done for the world and saving two continents in World War II, not, you know, being the least of the things that America's done. And then you've got a president apologizing. And what I think is so spectacular is the fact that you can watch what this guy does, Donald Trump, and you know that he is doing this because he does love this country. It has been good to him. He has prospered in America, but he loves this country, and that is something that I, quite frankly, I have to question in some of our previous leadership.
He also brought up the topic of immigration and made the comment that immigration is taking over Europe, and he warned that that is a major problem.
Yeah, he did. Now, here's the question. Why is Germany, which is the most prosperous country on the continent of Europe, and it is really the leader in economically, why can't they pay their 2%? Why? Well, how much do you spend, Germany, to medicate, incarcerate, and educate, and then to house and feed the immigrants that you're bringing in out of Syria? Why can't you pay your bills? How much of your money is going to do that? And that's the whole continent of Europe. But Germany's at the head of that. I mean, they're the most guilty of all, and that's something that I think that Trump was telling them. Look, you've got to start putting your priorities on defending this continent from serious threats, and some of the serious threats are embedded within those refugees that are coming in because they've already proven that many of them were terrorists.
How does this set up his meeting with Putin?
Oh, I tell you what, the fact that before he left there, the Europeans publicly announced that they have agreed to increase their defense spending. Now he's going to sit down and talk to Putin, and I got to tell you, I mean, I think it's brilliant. It's great. I think it's very good because he is strengthening NATO, and he's not weakening NATO. He's strengthening it, and NATO was created because of the Russian threat. You can say the Soviet threat, but it was really Russia was at the heart of it. So I think that he has put himself in a very good position to be able to sit down and have serious talks with Putin. But just think about this for a second. You're going to have a 30 plus year KGB officer going against the world's greatest negotiator. This one's going to be interesting to watch. Which one's going to come out of this on top? And I would say I'd love to be a fly on the wall.
Absolutely, or a bug of some sort in the room.
Yeah, right.
All right, General Jerry Boykin, as always, great to talk with you. Have a good time up there in the Northeast.
I will. Boston's a beautiful place.
All right. Our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin on mission up in Boston. He's, you know, the one thing redeeming about Boston is that almost on every corner there's a Dunkin' Donut. That's one of the positive things I have to say about Boston. Just one of many, though. All right, when we come back, a House panel agreed yesterday to protect the religious convictions of faith-based adoption agencies. Congressman Robert Atterholt of Alabama led the charge, and he'll be here to explain why. Next on Washington Watch, don't go away.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Thursday afternoon. All right, still to come, you are familiar, if you've been listening to the program, Pastor Andrew Brunson from North Carolina, been in Turkey, in prison for the last 2 years. He's been held captive by Turkish authorities. He is coming back into court this next week. He is one of the prisoners of conscience of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. And one of my fellow commissioners is going to join me in our next segment. She is the vice chairwoman of the commission, Christina Arriaga. She's going to join me. She's headed to Turkey this weekend to be there with Pastor Brunson. We're going to talk with her, get the latest on his situation. But yesterday, the House Appropriations Committee approved the Child Welfare Provider Inclusion Act as an amendment to the Labor, Health, and Human Services Appropriations Bill. There's about 13 of these appropriations bills. Now, the bad news is that for the last almost 10 years, we've been seeing government done by continuing resolution, meaning they just keep funding the government year after year with some increases, not passing the Individual Appropriations Acts, which these appropriations have these riders on them. Now, we have a commitment that we're going to start seeing government done the way it's supposed to be done with these budgets. But it's still very instructive because in this process, the committees do what they call markup of the bills, and amendments are added. And this particular amendment is to protect adoption agencies. And we've seen a rash of these cases across the country. In fact, I was just talking with the general who's up in Boston, Massachusetts being one of those states, D.C., another one. There's a handful that have said that if an adoption agency will not place children in configurations, could be same-sex households, configurations that violate their religious beliefs. We're talking about religious adoption agencies, that they will be forced out of business. And so as a result, what has happened is several of these adoption agencies have shut their doors. And children are not being, number one, children do not have the benefit of being placed through these adoption agencies into Christian homes that they might work with. And mothers who want to put their children up for adoption do not have the benefit of working with a faith-based adoption agency. And so what the amendment simply does is where the federal government is involved with federal funding to the states involving adoption, they cannot force a religious adoption agency to violate their faith. It sounds pretty simple. But of course, in the last under the last administration, it was open season on anyone and everyone of faith. So Congressman Robert Atterholt of Alabama was he represents the 4th Congressional District. Actually, they're voting right now on the House floor. So he's going to, as soon as he casts his vote, he's going to run off the floor and call in. But he was the really kind of the lead sponsor of this in the Appropriations Committee. And it simply is going to allow religious-based adoption agencies to operate. You know, it's similar to what happened with the what was called the HHS mandate, where businesses and organizations were forced to violate their faith when it came to contraception and abortifacients. And the courts, obviously, Hobby Lobby case being the most prominent, ruled in favor of them under the RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, saying that, no, we – the government has to allow – entities to operate according to their faith. Now, again, many of these abuses are happening at the state level, states where, you know, they've become hostile to religious freedom. And so the federal government, it just applies to where the federal government is involved and where states are getting money from the federal government, in particular as it relates to adoption. So there will still be a standalone bill that will be pushed, but the appropriations bills, as I said, there's over a dozen of them. That's where a lot of this legislating happens, because appropriations bill technically are supposed to be the bills that pass. And if you get riders onto them, amendments, you're able to get them through easier. And I emphasize easier, that's in parentheses, in the Senate, where it requires 60 votes. So anyway, it's good to see members of the House advancing this. You had actually a pretty healthy vote. There's about almost 60 members of the Appropriations Committee, and it passed there yesterday. So anyway, we're going to wait till we're going to hear from Congressman Atterholt when he gets off the House floor. We're going to talk to him about that. It's good to see the pushback that's taking place really in the wake of the Trump administration. The Trump administration putting a priority on religious freedom, and Congress is following suit. States are following suit. This is one of those things where leadership matters. We were just talking with the general about what happened yesterday at NATO. But leadership matters. And I've spoken to and have a whole lot more that I'll be doing in the days ahead, but I've spoken to a number of international leaders of other countries, who are taking note that America is putting an emphasis on religious freedom, both here and abroad. And as a result, they're changing their policies. Now, some of them not as aggressively as we would like, but they are changing their policy. Elections have consequences, all right? And we're seeing changes. I've never seen as much positive change that I have seen in the last almost 2 years now, a year and a half, a little over. It's because of folks like you were engaged and involved. And it's just where the verse comes to mind, do not grow weary in well-doing. Despite what the media is saying, the fake news, what the left is doing, we cannot lose heart. Okay. Congressman Atterholt's going to join us after the break. He's coming off the House floor. And then still to come, Christina Arriaga is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about Pastor Andrew Brunson. So don't go away. Coming back with more Washington Watch after this.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, you just got off the House floor. They got votes going on. That's usually what happens this time every afternoon. Congressman Robert Adderholt of the 4th Congressional District of Alabama. Robert, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Well, let me first say congratulations and thank you for your leadership yesterday in the committee pushing forward on this measure that would – the Child Welfare Provider Inclusion Act, that language that would protect adoption agencies. And I explained a little bit of it while we were waiting for you. But just tell our listeners why this is needed and then what they can do to help make sure that this becomes law.
Yeah, well, this was brought to my attention by Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania. He represents the Philadelphia area, and actually the government entity up in the Philadelphia area was not allowing the Catholic Relief Services, Bethany Christian Adoption Agency, which I know you're very familiar with.
Right,
they would
right.
not allow them to participate in the adoption and the foster care program simply because of their religiously held beliefs that they believed in the traditional family. And it's not that they were saying that if a homosexual couple, you know, they were able to adopt, but they're saying because you will not endorse this and because you don't believe in this, then we're not even going to allow you to participate in our adoption programs. And not only has it happened in Philadelphia, but it's happened in Massachusetts, it's happened in San Francisco, here in Washington, D.C. And this is to send a message to say that that's unacceptable, that if someone has their sincere beliefs, their moral compass says we would like to make sure that we place the children in families with the traditional mother and father, then you know they should be able to do so and not allow them to be excluded from all the other organizations and to be allowed to participate. So that's really what it was, is to keep them from being discriminated against.
Right. And just to be very clear, this does not prohibit another agency from placing children in other configurations, whether it's same-sex homes or whatever. It just simply says you cannot.
Yeah, and that's a whole different debate. I mean, you know,
right.
we can debate that issue, but that's not even what this amendment was about.
Right.
This issue was purely about saying that just because you believe in a traditional family, we're not even going to allow your organization to take in foster kids or take in adoptive kids through our city because you don't believe like we believe in.
But I wanted to bring that up because the opponents of this amendment to the appropriations bill actually said that. They claimed that,
we were discriminating,
people.
And the reverse is true. They were discriminating against those with faith-based programs. And, as you said, there are organizations out there that will put children with same-sex couples. But this was saying that don't take our names out of the hat as far as being able to adopt kids out through your organization just because we have these firm beliefs. And this is not something for somebody to be discrimination toward. It's just simply that, as you know, that some people and a lot of us have that we think the best family is a mother and a father in a traditional setting.
Well, not only does the social science prove that, but yes,
right.
we do believe it as
we
well.
We believe that, and we have to back it up.
There's been testimony from has been presented of young girls in particular, women who have found themselves in a what could traditionally be called a crisis pregnancy, and, you know, debating as to whether or not to keep the child, what to do with the child. And when they had the option of working with a faith-based adoption agency like Bethany Christian Services, they chose adoption knowing that the child would go into a Christian home. And so
exactly.
this is a part of fostering a culture of life by allowing faith-based organizations to be involved in that part of the process.
Right. Otherwise, that child would not be put up for adoption, even though the mother knows that they probably could not take care of it if they just knew that it was going to be a roll of the dice of what family that child would get into. And so that simply says that if I'm going to release my child to Bethany Christian Services or the Catholic Relief Organizations, we know that they're going to a traditional home, and that's where I would want my particular child to be sent.
All right, before we run out of time, how can folks help you, Robert, make sure this becomes law?
Well, good question. What as you mentioned, this was in the appropriations process. Yeah, this was a bill that was a standalone bill by Congressman Kelly from Pennsylvania. It was not going anywhere in the House because it just, you know, as you can imagine, there's a lot of people that don't want to see anything like that move forward. So what we did, we put it on the appropriations Labor, Health, and Human Services subcommittee bill as an amendment, and therefore it'll be going over to the Senate side, and we just need to tell our senators that this is the Adderholt Amendment needs to stay in the final package.
All right. We will absolutely do that. Congressman Robert Adderholt of Alabama, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tony. Thanks for your work. We'll be in touch.
All right. Take care, my friend. Congressman Robert Adderholt of Alabama, good conservative leader, actually traveled with him to Israel in the past. Great man. Okay, when we come back, American pastor Andrew Brunson. He is facing a third hearing in Turkey. He's been held for 2 years captive in Turkey. We're going to talk about it with my fellow commissioner for the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, who is headed to Turkey. Christina Arriaga joins me next. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right. U.S. Pastor Andrew Brunson, imprisoned in Turkey now for over 2 years, faces a major week as speculation swirls that he could either be granted his freedom, return to his family, or could face a sentence of what could amount to almost a life in prison in Turkey. With us now is Christina Arriaga. She is the vice chairwoman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, one of my co-commissioners. And in fact, we were meeting all day today. We rushed over here to the studio for the program. And this was one of the topics we talked about. And Christina, welcome first to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, the commission has prisoners of conscience, and you have adopted Pastor Andrew as one of your prisoners of conscience. You've been to Turkey. You're headed to Turkey for this hearing that's coming up early next week. What's the status?
Well, the hearing is going to be on July 18th in Izmir. It's a particularly tragic situation. First time I met Andrew was about a year ago. In fact, my colleague Sandy Jolly, another commissioner, and I were the first Americans to see him in prison. And at the time, he had already lost 50 pounds. When he was first detained simply for pastoring a church, a Christian church in Izmir, he was put in a prison cell meant for 8 people with 19 other inmates. Charges were initially not even made. And then eventually, a year later, the government leaked the indictment to the press, a 63-page indictment calling for 35 years in prison before his lawyer even received it. There are absolutely no witnesses against him. They're all secret witnesses made up by the government.
And they're charging him with being a spy.
The Erdogan, the has taken care of all opposition press in Turkey, and he has fed stories about this man, Andrew Brunson, who was supposed to kill him and participated in the coup attempt. And he has even said that had Andrew Brunson been able to kill him with a pastor bomb, he would have been the next director of the CIA. There has been absolutely no evidence presented against him.
Well, Andrew's been in Turkey for his ministry. He's been there like 23 years. Andrew, he's heavily vested in the Turkish people.
Yes, and he released a statement. He loves the Turkish people. In fact, he prays for the Turkish people every single day. All he wanted to do was bring Jesus Christ to the people in Turkey in Izmir, a place that is so close to so many biblical sites. And unfortunately, he was trapped in this game of hostage diplomacy.
He's 50 years old. His health is not real good. This is a critical week for him.
This is a very critical week for him. He turned 50 while in prison. He wrote a note to his wife saying, I thought we would be spending the rest of our lives and age together. That may not happen. He's strong, but he's a man who's struggling because he's so dislocated from reality. He never is allowed to leave his cell for anything. There's no cafeteria, there's no gym, there's no exercise, there's no patio. The only time that he can leave his cell is once a week to see his wife through a plexiglass window or to meet with a consular officer. That's it. He is the only American, the only Christian, the only person who speaks English. Now he's allowed to speak English to his wife. At the beginning of his prison term, he was not even allowed to speak English to his wife.
What's his in terms of safety, I mean, the prisons, first off, here in America, you know, for those that have been exposed to our prison system, prisons in foreign countries are much different. And I have happened to know a lot about the prisons. I started my career, unlike many politicians, I actually started my career in prison. I didn't end in prison. That's a joke. that was when I was in law enforcement. My first assignment was working in the corrections. It's much different. It is not a good situation. What is his physical safety and security like?
When we went to see him in prison, the prison was an eerie place because it was very clean. And at the same time, there were cinder block walls with pictures of Mickey Mouse and strange, cheery, weird, bizarre animals. We were strip searched as commissioners, even as U.S. diplomats, and we were led into a room where there were four plastic chairs, a formica table that divided the room in two, and then we waited there for some time, and we heard clanging and clanging and clanging behind the wall, and the door opened, and in came Andrew Brunson. He looked somewhat disoriented. He looked very, very slender. And he was grateful to see us there, but clearly very fearful to be forgotten. He could not understand how the United States government could allow a NATO ally to arrest an American pastor, not even charge him for a year, and then try to sentence him to 35 years in prison.
So what has been his request to you? And I know that we've continued with some correspondence that we've gotten back and forth or from him, reports that we've gotten. What is his request?
He keeps saying, please don't forget me. Please don't forget me. He has asked me to tell the American public to please pray for him, to pray for strength, and to pray that Erdogan's heart is softened and that he releases this innocent man. The suffering for his children who are in the United States has been terrible. They have postponed weddings and birthdays and Christmases waiting for their father. All he wants to do is be able to live according to his deeply held convictions with his family. That's all he's asking.
And here's a man simply called by God to minister to people, pastoring a church there, ministering to the Turkish people. And he's been in prison for that. And he says it's very clearly because of his Christianity. He's in prison because he is a Christian in Turkey.
Oh, absolutely. The government only presented the so-called secret evidence, and then they also presented a cooking video that his own daughter had sent him of a very common Middle Eastern rice and meat dish. And the government said, this is a Gulenist delicacy. The Gulenists are those who are accused by Erdogan of trying to overthrow the regime. And because he wanted to learn how to make this recipe, obviously he was part of the attempted coup. It doesn't make any sense. Many, many pastors have come forward at great risk, by the way, in Turkey to try to testify on his behalf and try to defend them. And the judge has ruled that no one can testify in the defense of Andrew Brunson.
Well, even last month, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Senator Shaheen, a Democrat, met with Erdogan. Trying to secure the pastor's release, and Graham maintained that Brunson is absolutely not guilty of anything. The hearing comes up next week. Is there a chance that they just punt on this again and just continue like they did last time in this past April?
My greatest hope is that they cancel the whole thing and release him. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the case. The Turkish government has received very direct pleas from President Trump and from Vice President Pence. Senator Lankford in the National Defense Authorization Act said that Turkey wouldn't get airplanes unless they release Andrew Brunson. They said it by name. There are all sorts of people pleading with Erdogan to release this man, and he just won't. And I think it's become a contest of who can be the biggest bully in the park, and Erdogan certainly thinks that he can be.
So, folks, this situation, I perceive, and you've been much closer to this, Christina, I think the United States is doing what it can. It's doing as much as it can. The president's brought up, you mentioned the vice president, the National Defense Authorization Act that you made reference to with the F-35 jets, that's making its way through Congress, restricting the sale of the military hardware over this. The State Department's engaged in it. The USERF is involved in it. It looks like God's going to have to move here.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt. There's nothing else.
So this is what I would do. In keeping with his request to you that we not forget him and that we pray for him, folks, this would be a great time this coming Sunday in advance of this hearing and Christina going to Turkey to be there for this next court date, is to ask your pastors, if you're listening, you do it. If not, ask your pastor to take just a moment to pray for Pastor Andrew Brunson this Sunday and pray for his release and for the other prisoners of conscience, the other Christians and believers around the world that are being persecuted for their faith. I know we have designated Sundays for that, but we need to be praying, I think, every week. Because the problem has become so pronounced and widespread. I mean, it's growing, and we're seeing this on basically every corner of the planet. We see many people of faith, Christians in particular, being targeted for their faith and persecuted. So this would be a great weekend, a great Sunday to pray for Pastor Brunson. And I would actually throw in, Christina, they pray for you as well, as you head over to Turkey to be there next week.
Please do. As you can probably hear from my accent, I'm Cuban-American. My father fled Fidel Castro's Cuba to be able to live according to his religious convictions. My mother was in a concentration camp in Germany. I'm so grateful that we live in a country where we can go to church on Sunday and that no one is knocking on the door right now at arresting you or arresting me. This happens all over the world. All over the world, people get arrested just for asking other people to pray. So, yes, please, please keep us in mind, and that his wife, Noreen, has the strength to be there in that trial and to witness her husband being so falsely accused.
So you're passionate about this issue of religious freedom.
I'm absolutely passionate. I can't imagine that there is any more important human right than the ability to live according to the dictates of our conscience. People die for this all over the world, and people refuse to be silenced. I witnessed so many heroic people. Just yesterday, I was with a Vietnamese man who wrote a poem when he was 11 about God, and he was tortured in Vietnam at 11 years old. And he has devoted his life to fight for religious freedom, met with a Cuban pastor. You were there as well, Tony, when that came to the United States just to help other pastors in Cuba collect information and bring it back to Cuba. There's so many people around the world that suffer tremendously. We have it so easy here.
We tend to take that freedom for granted here.
We absolutely do. And we think everything ends up in Washington, D.C. We think that people in Washington solve it. No, it's your council member. It's the person in your neighborhood who doesn't allow you to put up a cross in your yard during Christmas time. And it's our fault. Our biggest risk in this country is complacency. And that's why the work of FRC is so important. That's why this radio is so important. And that's why you need to tell your friends about this. There's an American in prison in Turkey. And we have to make sure that this man gets out. Because if it were you or your husband or your wife or your child, you also would be pleading for people to pray for him.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you made the connection. Domestic, and I talk about this quite frequently on the program, that the priority we place on religious freedom here at home, whether it's, you know, not going silent when you're told you can't put a cross in your own front yard, or yesterday we had a local pastor from Arkansas who did a devotional with a football team and had the Freedom From Religion Foundation come after him, challenging him, saying he violated the Constitution. When we stand up for that, we send a message to, you know, the state capitals. We send a message to Washington, D.C. that as Americans, religious freedom is important to us. And when Washington gets that message and they start talking about the importance of religious freedom, then the terrorists and the tyrants in faraway places get the message. And all people, not just Christians, but all people are better off. And their rights are protected because, as you pointed out, it's fundamental. Religious freedom is really the foundation for every other freedom that people enjoy.
Oh, absolutely it is. And I always tell I have three children. We sit around the kitchen table, right? All important conversations always take place around the kitchen table and at home. And
or around the studio table. My co-host over there, Samuel, my youngest, is doing his homework. He listens to – he's listening to our conversation here and learning. But you're so – it's so right to have those conversations.
And don't let anyone silence you, ever. Ever, don't let people silence you. Of course, my kids then say that I silence them, but I said only your mother can silence you once in a while. Don't let anyone silence you ever on small things or big things. Don't. I mean, it's like telling the truth, right? You always tell the truth. There's no such thing as a little lie. There's no such thing as a little silencing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Christina, we're just about out of time. Can I pray for you?
Please.
Folks, I want to ask you, I don't do this very often on the air, but since I'm challenging you this Sunday to pray for Pastor Brunson, you know, if you're driving, keep your eyes open, hands on the wheels. But I'm going to pray right now. Father, we just thank you that we have the freedom here in this country to advocate and defend the freedoms of others. And I pray that first we would never take for granted the choice that we have, the freedom that we have first to choose Jesus Christ as our own Lord and Savior. But Lord, also that we would advocate for and defend the right of others to make the choice, just as you have given us the choice. And so I pray right now for religious freedom. I pray for those being persecuted around the globe that, Lord, you would comfort them and strengthen them and bring freedom to them. But I pray specifically for Pastor Brunson and for this hearing next week that, Lord, you would open the prison doors. And, Lord, your hand would move where no one else has been able to. And I pray for Christina as she goes. Give her safety. And I thank you for that in Jesus' name.
Thank you.
Folks, out of time. Thanks for joining us. And please do pray for Pastor Brunson and Christina as she heads over to be with him in Turkey. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.